This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora and welcome to Sightlines, your guide to the visual arts in and around Dunedin. I'm Sally McMillan and this show is brought to you on behalf of the Dunedin Public Art Gallery Society. Imagine this. 15 clever young women walk into an art gallery. Most, if not all of them, are type A personalities. Competitive, forthright, ambitious and used to calling the shots. Women who hold down professional jobs and run families and are just generally sickeningly capable, really, but also perpetually time-starved and a bit exhausted. Boss ladies, if you want the vernacular. Now, let's give them all some wine. Potentially quite a bit of wine. And let's also give them a decent wad of cash, say 20 grand, of their own money, enough to warrant some expenditure anxiety, and tell them that they all have to agree on a piece or pieces of artwork to buy and hang in their own homes. What, I hear you think, could possibly go wrong? This month on Sightlines, we're talking to Dunedin women Tess McLaughlin and Vanessa Cook about art collectives. Tess, along with now 12 friends, is a member of Good Kunst, an art-buying collective established in 2008 and still running, and recently the subject of an award-winning short film. Vanessa is an art consultant and curator at Milford Galleries and has been an advisor to Good Kunst since shortly after it got up and running. As listeners will know, Vanessa is a font of knowledge on all things art-related, but she's here today to share her particular wisdom on art collectives. Ladies, welcome to Sightlines.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here, Sally.
Now, I have to acknowledge off the bat that the scenario I painted in the intro is not strictly accurate because in practice, the way that the collective buys its art doesn't actually require the consensus of all of the members, but we'll get to that shortly. Tess, can we start at the very beginning, very good place to start, and ask you, how did Good Kunst come to life?
Our group did have some loose connections, but we weren't like a thick, close, you know, girl gang. There were old school ties, uni friends, husbands who skied together, but being close friends wasn't the foundation, and I honestly think that was healthy, a great start. We had a structure of wanting it to be across New Zealand, so Philly, who founded it, based in Tauranga, created a constitution that had involved five regional groups, Auckland, Tauranga, Wellington, Christchurch and Dunedin, and we would have three members in each.
And so Philly would be Phillida Perry?
Yes.
And you initially met, I think, two times a year and took turns to host, and now you just meet once a year?
Yes, I think we're a bit ambitious, maybe even suggesting three meetings a year. And we all had small children when we began, babies. I mean, people were actually still feeding babies at these meetings, prams, and of course we're involving aeroplanes, luggage. So three times a year was too quickly, we decided too much. Twice a year, we started to say one meeting was optional. And now we're down to one compulsory meeting a year.
Right, sounds practical. And I imagine that meeting, is that a whole weekend of art,
a whole weekend
get-together related stuff?
Yeah, a whole weekend. So
fantastic. When do you actually buy the art? You don't buy it that weekend, as I understand, and we can get to the mechanics of that a bit later on, but you buy, I think, as the regional group. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the three people in a region will have the power or the buying purse for a year. Obviously, that's convenient because the decision-making involved in the consideration time it takes to reach a purchasing decision on behalf of the whole group is better for having caught up regularly. And it was always about learning. This process of being involved in a collective was to enrich our lives with also learning more about art. So we didn't just meet to buy something. We met to visit galleries and talk to artists and learn about each other.
Yes.
And learn how to communicate our differences.
Yeah, yeah. Vanessa, turning to you, I imagine that you've hosted quite a few of these gallery visits at Milford over the years. What does that involve for you?
you've hosted quite a few, and not just Tess's group, who have really been there since the start of my gallery journey. So I've got to know everyone quite well. And I think one of the first groups I ever met were some members of your group who came to the Auckland Gallery and were looking at works. So they've come over the years, but it's not just me. It's a number of galleries. And as a gallery, we can show people works and show the group works and talk about specific shows and specific works that may fit the aims of the group. And it really, for me, it's an educational thing as well, because you're talking to so many people at one time and you're a group of enthusiastic people who want to learn. So it's not just coming to buy a picture for your wall. It's coming to really learn about the artists, the practice, what works may work well for you in your collection, and what the aim is of collecting, not just having pictures. So it's a full experience. And as a gallery, it's wonderful for us because we get to really get to know people and, I guess, talk about our artists in a really enthusiastic and great way, an educational way.
I've personally always regarded buying art as a fairly solitary activity, which I share mainly just with my husband, who fortunately has a similar aesthetic to me. But listening to you both, I can see now that I've been missing out on a lot of fun. But with any group that size, you know, decisions by committee are notoriously difficult ones and not always well made. So I guess there has to be some structure and some rules. Tess, can you tell us about how the collective functions at a practical level?
Our meetings are reasonably formal. They've become, at the back of our mind, important to not get boozed at, to have clear minutes, to ensure that when we leave the meeting, we know exactly what we expect out of the year ahead. Also, we tend to nail or refine, you know, little things, little bumps in the road, such as damage and things that are happening to the art that is moving around the country. Perhaps get a little terse on people who aren't pulling their weight, moving the art on time. 4 monthly can suddenly disappear very quickly. So I think it's really important to have that formality. But we are friends and it's fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
And speaking of the money that you're spending, at the risk of being indelicate, how much money do you contribute per person per year?
We're now 2,000 per individual a year.
Okay. And you've got 13 members in the group. So obviously, as you say, that's a reasonable wad of cash for your regional group to spend over the course of the year. So those good decisions are really important when you're dealing with that amount of not just your own money, but other people's money as well. Yeah. So once the art has been purchased, what then happens to it? What are the logistics? You've talked about the paintings being, or the arts being moved around the country, which sounds a bit fraught in itself, but what does happen to the art once you've got it?
The art typically is purchased from an art dealer or gallery where it is still present through the period of the exhibition. And that can get tricky when there are 4 monthly rotations, because there's going to be, obviously, time lost in it being on someone's wall. So our rotation quite quickly happens independently of the art being purchased. And the art in circulation moves around to a roster. The art that has been purchased at the time will enter the circulation.
Right. And everybody gets it for 4 months.
Yes.
When you are moving stuff around the country, I mean, I think most people know that to move works under glass in particular is quite a fraught process. Do you contribute funds towards the cost of doing that and insurance and everything like that?
Yes, we have prioritised the packaging of the artwork. It's expensive. We buy what are called pick packs. Yes. Vanessa will know how expensive they are. They've definitely risen in price, which has now influenced, you know, some of our later agenda items at meetings about the size of the artwork we're buying. Even though we would love large works, because obviously, you know, being part of a collective means you can afford these, you know, punchy items that you wouldn't normally afford. And it's just that moving them around is pricey. And work on canvas is lighter in weight. Work behind glass adds to the weight, the cost of freight, and also more prone to damage.
Yes. Having a piece of art in your home for just 4 months, then relinquishing it, I imagine might be quite challenging for some people. And speaking for myself, I could honestly say that it would probably take me about 4 months just to decide where to hang it. How does this differ from the experience of buying and hanging art that you select for your personal collections?
I think that's the value of being in a collective, that in collectively buying something, you are exposed to work that's outside your comfort zone, and that you can experience art that you might not have chosen for yourself. It's expanded our art appreciation horizons in allowing us to learn from each other. Because, you know, it's quite easy to get channeled in on, you know, the little bubble that you live in. And it might be just to need an artist to start with. And it's actually really exciting to have that breadth.
And Vanessa, I know there will be people listening who like the idea of the art group in theory for all of the reasons that Tess is exploring, but might find the idea of a group decision where decisions are made by the group somewhat daunting in practice. What tips would you have for the collective curious?
Well, I agree with all of what Tess has said, and you almost need to be brave and relinquish trust to someone else, because it is going to be challenging sometimes. But sometimes the most challenging pieces of art are the most rewarding pieces. It's really easy to walk into a gallery and say, I know what I like, but do you know that you're going to like that in 10 years? And I can guarantee that some of the artworks that you bought in your group 10 years ago, you look now and you say, oh, I loved that at the time, but I don't know if I like it. And then other pieces that someone else may have chosen early on and you thought, oh, I can't even be in a room, but it keeps talking to you year after year after year. So I think you have to trust that as you grow and your collection grows and as you're more educated and as you get to know more artists, that your taste will actually grow. I think you just have to jump in the deep end and not think too much about a decision and not worry too much about someone else's decision. You need to say, okay, if those people are buying, I'm just going to let them go. Going to let them go for it. And often I know that you had three buyers in each place, so it wasn't falling all on anyone's shoulders. There are other ways to structure a group and to take away that risk if you really, really don't want that. Some groups will put in an amount of money and then every 3 months a person will buy a work and they know that that's going to stay in their home, but they're using the collective funds. So that's another way to do it. But I would really recommend the way that Tess's group has done it, because I've watched your personal collections grow as well, and I can see from the very early days to how many years later now, 15, 16 years later,
the confidence,
yes, yeah, that's a really good word, the confidence, the Absolutely. Challenge, the works that you know you put on the wall and you know that you're going to see them every time you walk into a room. They're not pretty pictures. They are really, really punchy pieces of work. And I know that collective has really helped you all achieve that as a collective, but also individually.
I know that obviously all good things must come to an end, and so it was, Tess, with your group. In 2022, you'd had a stellar run and you decided to auction your collection. Tell us about that, starting with, is that the usual process with collectives?
I don't know actually what the usual process is with collectives. And we're lucky that, you know, there are a few people in our group who had they did a lot of research about other art collectives, and there have been very successful art groups before ours. Mm-hmm. So we were discussing how they had, you know, the success or failure, you might put it, of those groups. We went through Art and Object, an auction house in Auckland, and we particularly wanted to, in the end, we prioritised seeing the collection as a whole hung on a wall and to celebrate that. Everything else that happened in that evening was also a celebration of the friendship that had grown, and it was weirdly bonding.
And did some of you buy some of the works yourselves from the auction?
Yes. I think actually there were about 40 works in the end, so essentially maybe everyone got a piece.
Now, I know that art as an investment is not the object, and we've talked a bit about that, but obviously by this point the reality is that you had all invested quite a lot in the connection. So was the auction a success from a financial point of view?
I think it was a success. Most people would say so. I mean, not many people sell works by emerging artists so early in their career, and that's a question mark. So the really noticeable success or profits, you might say, made were from, not surprisingly, the first pieces we bought.
Yes. Vanessa, coming back to you as a curator and a consultant, you have visibility of art auctions and how things sell. And while obviously, as we say, it's not all about the money, nobody wants to lose money. So I imagine you might have some tips for people who might be thinking about setting up a collective about how to select work in a way that will enhance its saleability when the time comes.
Yes, well, it's really all about the artist and the artist's work. And I would say, as a group, you have a lot of power of people to do a lot of research. And I would say research your artists. How long have they been practicing for? Have they won any awards? Do they have works in public collections? Have they had public residencies and shows? How much work do they produce? What's their work ethic like? Which galleries are they represented by? And do they have a presence in a secondary market? A lot of those emerging artists won't necessarily have a presence in the secondary market, and so you're going to be going directly to galleries. But I guess a little bit of the risk is already taken away by the gallery, because the gallery has done a lot of that homework for you. So you can use your consultants and your gallerists to get that information, and you can say, hey, what's this artist's work ethic like? Because the thing is that there is a relentless drive with the artists that are successful. They work really, 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 really hard. And you can see that in the work. And yes, it is, and you can see that over time. And they have an individual voice. They have a unique voice. Often they're talking, that their message that they want to say is wound up in their image. And these things together make an amazing work. And as a gallerist, we're spending time trying to find these artists, yes, all the time, and they represent what we want to get across as well. So we've done a lot of that homework for you. So ask your gallerist. We love talking about that sort of stuff. We love sharing that information.
That's great advice. So, Tess, you're now into the second iteration of Good Kunst. You have 13 members this time around. And you, in fact, have recently become the subject of an award-winning film by one of your members, Phyllida Perry, which was premiered, I think, last month at the Misty Flicks Awards in Te Awamutu.
Very exciting.
And the second iteration, you are following more or less the same format as your previous group?
Yes, and also to, you know, the 13 in the new group are actually 13 from the 15.
Yes.
Was a decision we made to just stick together and carry on exactly as we have, because it's been a fantastic first chapter.
It ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Phyllida Perry, she's one of those phenomenal people who sort of started out with dabbling around filmmaking, film production as a hobby, and then around the time of our auction, she began filming the group. We became aware that she was filming us and gathering the raw footage from our years of meetings to make the short film that eventually won that prize at the Misty Flicks.
We will look forward to seeing that when it's publicly released.
Yes.
What a great...
Well, I think Vanessa found the AI summary, so I found it again. It's a documentary about a group of New Zealand women whose long-standing friendships are tested as they decide to auction off their shared art collection. So
that's a good tease.
It
makes me want to see it even more. Tess McLaughlin and Vanessa Cook, I'm sure I'm not alone in being quite enthusiastic now about the idea of art collectives, having heard from you today. Tess, thanks for sharing your journey, and Vanessa for your art appreciation and purchase wisdom. We do look forward to seeing the film when it's publicly released.
Thanks for having me, Sally.
You're most welcome. And now here's Ross Curry with the latest on what's happening in the local art scene. This is a Snapshot. Ross, tell us what's on at DPAG in December.
Well, if you have friends or family staying over the Christmas holidays, there's something for everyone at DPAG. On the ground floor, Hui Kau continues to impress with a wide range of works from our extensive permanent collection. Connections between medieval and contemporary art are on display in Paradise of Imagination. The curator of the show, Dr. Anya Samara Singh, was interviewed by Sally in a previous episode of Sightlines, so this could be a useful background to this exhibition if you're planning to attend it. Abstract Arrangements is also showing over this month, enabling you to get a good introduction to abstract art. And in Meet the Zavrosses, Michael Zavros shows his painstaking paintings and lets you into his family and his studio. But there are also questions implied about beauty, commodity and desire, and how these have shaped society.
And moving down Stuart Street to the railway station, there's a show there.
That's right. The Otago Art Society at the railway station has its annual Christmas show in Art to Go. And you can take away anything you buy, and this could be a great destination for a Christmas gift. The Society has many talented painters, potters and craftspeople. And this is a great opportunity to buy a piece of art at a reasonable price.
And moving to the dealer galleries, what's on in Dunedin dealer galleries this month?
Well, lots, Sally. At the Moray Gallery, well-known artist Doug Hart is featuring from the 6th to the 24th. Doug's often locally based work is intricate and can be whimsical and humorous. And this show has work based on Port Chalmers and wittily titled Portfolio. Gallery De Novo has its traditional, always popular Around Christmas show this December, featuring works from their regular artists. All the works are round and about the size of a large dinner plate. Milford Gallery has two group shows through December to January the 26th. Strands features works from Hotari and Lisa Rehana and Heidi Brickell. And a wide range of artists have new work in a group show called Heaven vs. Hell. Both George Saville and Roger Mortimer have previously exhibited at Milford, but there are some new painters in the mix. Anthony Densham's work is landscape-based, straddling abstraction and figuration. And Wellington-based Clark Roweth uses oils and pencils to create work of contemporary realism, often incorporating the fantastic and the surreal. At the RDS Gallery, there's a group show from December the 12th. Abstraction Creation has a number of interesting artists. Louise Marmo plays on conflict and resolution in her drawings. And Dunedin-based Joms Thompson Batch is a self-taught drawer, painter, and ceramicist. Port Chalmers Donna Jackson paints portraits and still life with a special focus on flowers. She's also a live wedding painter, where she paints a scene from the wedding, during the wedding, and they get to take it away on the same day.
Well, that's quite something. As always, I'm so impressed by the broad range of opportunities there are for the art interested in and around Dunedin over the next couple of months. Thanks, Ross.
That's right.
And thanks to you, our listeners. If you'd like to hear today's show again or listen to previous shows, you can find us on the Otago Access Radio and DPAG Society websites or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to join the Society, you can also find a form on our website or join at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery reception. Thanks to contributor Ross Curry and producer and DPAG Society President Jonathan Quayle. Join us again next month for another dive into the visual arts in Dunedin and beyond. I'm Sally McMillan, and you've been listening to Sightlines.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.